The title is Innovation and Growth. I'd like to move a little step backward and ask, where does innovation come from? As background papers, you can look at the book Cimoli Doris Stiglitz and the more recent Doris and Nelson in the handbook by Hall and the late Nate Rosenberg. There are different ways to introduce these remarks. One way is the Simon metaphor. You have people from Mars that are sent to the Earth and they observe from above and they see all market transaction in green and all institutional transaction in red. What they will they observe? Well, they'll observe a lot of red. That is a lot of activities going on within organization, linked to some extent by red lines, markets. This would apply for all human activities that the Mars people would observe on the Earth, and applies even more to the activities related to innovation. I mean, innovation basically is a business, is an activity, not a business. It's an activity that goes on within various type of organizations. Some are business firms, but even activities in business firms are not market activities. I mean, when you work in a firm, you don't say to the one working near you, how much are you going to give me if I pass to you this piece of paper? I mean, these are organizational activities within a profit-motivated organization. This leads to a more subtle, granted that that leads to a more subtle question. I mean, that is the endogeneity versus the exogeneity of innovation. I mean, take the solo model. Solo model, as you know, in a first approximation, innovation is exogenous and is the driver by default of growth. Then comes new growth theory. Says it is endogenous to the economic activities because firms undertake a good deal of innovation with profit motivation. Are you happy with that? Maybe yes and maybe no. In the sense that yes, you want to acknowledge that a good deal of innovative activities is undertaken within business firms. At the same time, with that art form, Dickness would say, you're squeezing innovation into a problem of optimal allocation of resources, which is something that you don't want to do. In fact, I mean, you are enlarging the production function, basically, and you are pushing into the production function also innovative activities, which is precisely the opposite of any Schumpeterian evolutionary spirit. I mean, as time goes on, I think that I prefer Bob Solow, because at least it gives ample room to an analysis of the institutional embeddedness of the processes of learning and innovation that cannot be squeezed into a problem of allocation of optimal allocation of resources. In fact, I mean, I think the premise of all analysis of innovation is that it is institutionally embedded, and also both in its origin and in its economic effect. So while it is true that you never observe in history self-sustained growth without innovation, it's not true the contrary. You can have innovation without self-sustained growth. I mean, a good deal of the invention that on which the first industrial revolution was based and before were not invented in the West, but in China. And still China did not undertake an industrial revolution because of the institutional context. Now, how do institutions embed innovative processes? Well, first of all, they are fundamental in shaping the opportunities of scientific and technological innovation. I mean, we spend, myself not too much, but our community spend a considerable amount of time, possibly too much, in debunking the so-called linear model, from science to applied science to technology to application to growth. To some extent, the debunking was true. I think we went far, far too far. I mean, I will come back later. Science is a fundamental major engine of innovation and growth. Science is basically driven by institutional non-market factors. Now we have marketized everything, so we tend also to marketize science, and probably we are going to kill the goose that is laying golden eggs. At different level of development, institution affect opportunities at different level. I mean, they can be straight science policy, graduate education, frontier technological project. I shall come back to that in a while. In any case, here, institutions are the central actor. Well, then, this is probably the most uncontroversial point, institutions affect the socially distributed learning and technological capabilities, broad education, training. This is not, this is a favoring condition for growth, but not necessarily. I mean, take the United States of America. I mean, it's a country that has got a high-tech elite and a majority of illiterate people. It's not that leadership is associated with broad social distributed skills. always, in different ways, the state has intervened with the targeted industrial support measure. Affect, especially in the through the process of catching up, but not only. Affecting the type of firms, the structure, ownership, mode of governance. In some countries, catching up had state-owned enterprises as a major actor. In other countries, there were not state-owned, but state-guided, say, like in Japan, or state-symbiotic, like in the German Bismarck period. In any case, the state was there guiding where to go, whether to be smart or to be dumb in terms of specialization. The state was there, sometimes directly, sometimes more indirectly. There is no case, to my knowledge, of catching up without heavy state intervention. I mean, even a mini country that is considered so pro-market, like Singapore, has got more than 20% of the industry owned by the state. I mean, the idea that the market miraculously builds capabilities is absolutely ridiculous. In fact, policies concerning catching up in particular have to do with the processes of capabilities accumulation. Put in another way, capability are the first order, incentive are the second order. In economics, we have been trained, fortunate myself, not too much, but people younger than me, for sure, you are clever if you are pose the problem and you figure out what is the structure of the incentive that is leading to that outcome. May I say it? Bullshit. Maybe you should ask what is the structure of capabilities that has led to that outcome, favorable or unfavorable, with incentives at most modulating what people or better organization do or do not do. Institution affect economic signals and indeed incentives. The late Alice Armstrong used to say that in order to achieve development, you need to get the prices wrong. Why you need to get the prices wrong? Because the right prices are those that are delivered by the international market on the ground of the absolute comparative advantage of a country. And a Stone Age economy probably will have prices in favor of stone-intensive products. But maybe you want, if you want to be smart, you want to go against your current specialization. I mean, if Korea had considered as a guidance the relative prices and relative profitabilities in 1945, they would probably produce rice and some noxious bacteria instead of being one of the world industrial power. You have got to go against current specialization in order to move to activities that present a high income elasticity world income elasticities and high learning opportunities. So computer chips are different from potato chips, to use the old discussion. Institution also affect selection mechanism, that is formal competition. important, but not so important. in the sense that competition mechanism work in and have to be there insofar as they have to prevent lazy monopoly position. They've got to prevent what a good deal of South American firms did under the regime of import substitution. There was the naive belief that you close down and then so the bad guys, the big bad guys, don't come in, and then local dynamic capability will come out again as mushrooms. No, not really. You need to have policies also to stifle monopoly position, like the Japanese, the Koreans did before. Finally, how do I go back? The state, last but not least, affect what the French institutional school of regulation says are the pattern of distribution of information and the pattern of interaction among major actors, between the state, the workers, the firms, the banks, what the French call regime of regulation. We, in economics, we have been, we have gone in completely the opposite way. I mean, instead of getting richer and richer account of the institutional relation among social groups, we got to the point that we squeezed everything into a representative agent. I mean, look at the state of macroeconomics. That is dismal. Instead of analyzing in detail what institutions are, for example, what are the changing boundaries between non-market and market institutions. We have spent the last 30 years in horrid masturbation exercises on the representative agent. I think it's time to reflect on the relationship between institution and economic process in general, and institutions and innovation in particular. Three examples. I was already mentioning it. Science is basically an institutional business that should not be touched by the market. If it is touched by the market, I'm exaggerating a bit, but not too much, it is corrupted in its rate and direction of search. In fact, I think it is still modern and valid, the book The Endless Frontier by Bush, not the Bush, Vannevar Bush. This has nothing to do with the other way. Science, The Endless Frontier, 1945, saying, well, after all, science is the long-term fuel of innovation and growth. At least over the last century or so, innovation has been fueled more directly by a mission-oriented program. Mariana Mazzucato has become famous, mission-oriented program. There was a discussion at OECD in late 70s, early 80s. I was a kid, but I was part of it. And there was the discussion, mission-oriented against diffusion-oriented. Diffusion-oriented was basically let the market work and give some incentives here and there. Well, on the side of mission-oriented, there was Keith Pavitt, Chris Freeman, Dick Nelson, and young people like myself and Luke Sirte. And of course, I mean, we had much more firepower than the others. Intellectually, we won. Politically, we badly lost, because when the American and the British representative, that is the Reagan administration and Thatcher administration, arrived and said, diffusion-oriented won. Now, boys, go home. And the discussion was over. And if you insist, we stop financing this whole program. So, diffusion-oriented won. Thanks God, we have rediscovered it. But from the Manhattan Project all the way to the Cold War, war is important. I mean, when Nixon heavily financed the National Institute of Health, he declares the war on cancer. Because if it's not war, there is the market, cost-benefit, etc. If there is a war, you can do it. Needless to say, you have got the full story of catching up from Germany and the US early on, all the way to Japan, Korea and China, that shows that catching up without the state could not have occurred. It was true then, it is true now. The big issue is how do countries catch up in a world where China is the world factory that has got more or less third world wages and first world technologies? And this is a big question mark on which I end, and I invite you to reflect.